Welcome to Pixar Planet's Monsters, Inc. Commentary. My name is Hannah, also known as Hannimation on the forums.
And I'm Sam, also known as MyGames19 on the forums.
I'm Ominous Flare, a.k.a. Dragon of Omnipotency in the forums.
To synchronize this commentary with your DVD, pause the video when the first blue shape appears after the Pixar logo disappears. And when I say play, click play. 3, 2, 1, play.
Alright, let's get this thing started. Like how this movie immediately kicks off right from the start. Now that usual long-lasting, you know, Walt Disney icon, it disappears quickly. Even the Pixar title will quickly pass by, with it cutting straight to the point where Luxor Jr. leaves his head up. The opening title is really nice. It's almost like one of those old American family sitcoms where the music is kind of cheesy and lighthearted, but when it's used here, it works effectively because later on the tone changes to an eerie one, right? So the opening really contrasts that.
Yeah, I really like the fun playfulness of the intro.
I remember it being mentioned in the original commentary how without this, it kind of felt like a dark feel. And so I personally also feel that with this, it actually adds a lot of colorfulness to the movie.
I believe this is the first Pixar movie to have such a nicely designed title. The movies before this, we got Toy Story, which, if I remember, it only have white blocky chunks of opening credits. This is a nice little scene here. I remember sitting in the theater just shivering with both excitement and fear. It's too quiet, you know, but, and a little creepy here.
It's a nice scene setup. Makes it feel like a real child's room.
What's really interesting here is that the child, who's supposed to be a simulation robot, is still able to express feelings like a real human.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Just squirming, like us, the audience, gasping even. I think it's at this point now, when parents are starting to worry about, you know, if the movie's accurate rating is PG, because yeah, it's getting a little scary for the kids here.
I remember in the original version, they were going to end as soon as the boy got scared, but they changed it so that they had this crazy, funny scene at the end here, so that people would connect with the monster more than the child.
It's definitely a good addition.
And this is a great way to enter into the monster world, just all of a sudden, the wall comes up, and there it is. Completely different than what our world is.
Yeah. The setup here is really nice. If I don't know any better, I would say this is an audition for some TV show. I mean, just look at the spotlights above, the monitors at the side.
I was reading through To Infinity and Beyond, the story of Pixar Animation Studios, and had this interesting tidbit that the story was originally about a 30-year-old man whose childhood drawings of monsters came to life, and they started, like, kind of plaguing his, like, existence, but only he could see them, so everyone thought he was crazy. And it turns out that these monsters represented fears that he never dealt with, and so as they helped him overcome these fears, they would disappear. And it's kind of interesting seeing how it began story-wise and how it actually ended up.
I like how they introduced Mr. Waternoose here, even though they could have done it a little bit scarier, you know. I'm glad they didn't, though. See how he stepped in a little bit too fast, you know. Might have been a little bit melodramatic if he just slowly creeps out of the shadow with this eerie music playing here.
And just to bring up an interesting fact, he is Waternoose III, And according to the facts which I've read, he acquired the company at the age 250, which would mean he's older than that. And saying that the door system was created by the first water noose, that would mean that the system has been around 750 years plus, which means that the monster technology is actually farther ahead than ours is.
This is a nice little comedic effect. Yeah, having Mr. Waternoose talking so grandly about him only to show us Sally sleeping in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love Mike Wazowski. Billy Crystal was perfect for this role.
I love the fact that Billy Crystal did Mike. It's great.
I really like this scene where they're training. It's really funny and shows how dedicated Mike is to being the top skier.
Yeah. All of these lines are really just so well done. They really establish the characters' personalities and relationships with each other. And Mike training Sally as hard as he could. It's nice.
They really went all out and made this commercial really cheesy. But I like it.
It's nice how Sally just picks up Mike and put him away like a soccer ball.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he's able to smile so excitedly. I always love it when this kind of movie establishes this kind of little neat, interesting universes which you could really explore. And here comes the running gag. Yep, keeping my face covered in water.
His reaction is totally something you wouldn't have expected.
Yeah, but I always wonder if his little heart was broken into pieces. Notice how these humorous scenes were created naturally out of what the character would do normally in their lives, instead of out of something, you know, that seems forced and artificial.
And they made a whole short on that.
Mm-hmm.
Mike's new car.
I like how they parallel the human world, you know, the big apartment buildings and walking to work and all the different things you would see if you'd walk down, you know, your own street.
Yeah, really relatable to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the same time, it's not, because you're passing monsters playing jump rope with someone's tongue.
If you just listen to Mike's voice, you know, you can find that Billy really fits his character here so easily, because you know, in real life, Billy Crystal is actually a stand-up comedian himself. You know, so for him to play a character that wisecracks this much is just very fun to watch. Especially if you're a fan of his.
To make all these different monsters, Pixar had created a software called MakeMonster, which allowed them to have different models for about 150 unique different monsters. So then they had like different set arms and legs and bodies and just kind of mix and match them.
And because this is the first movie to incorporate the new hair software, they have quite a few monsters that are simply based around the hair physics. And you'll see some of those later as well.
these two guys are a little bit on the silly side. Watching this scene today feels A-OK. It's quite funny, you know, I'll admit. I guess with this being rated G, you know, you have to make the jokes a little bit silly at times and not too serious.
Don't you love their nicknames for each other?
Yes.
Listen to the low-pitched jazz music that plays when Randall comes in. It really sets the type of villain Randall is. It's sneaky, crafty.
Love how he has this one large contact that goes in. And here's our introduction to Randall.
So this later, how after he says that, you know, the winds of change, a wind chime sort of sound effect is played after he say that.
And now we meet Roz, who is played by Bob Peterson, correct?
Yep. Great. Did you guys notice the newspaper there just now with the kid with the five heads? It's a good little irony here. Normally when a kid is born with five heads, the parents are terrified, but here they are thrilled. Lots of Easter eggs on the newspaper for you to read there, Pixar fans.
This is one of my favorite scenes of the movie, being able to see the monsters at work.
I think it wasn't until recently when I realized that, you know, this has a more like a factory feel, you know, it's a factory that manufactures screens, sort of like our electricity, you know, instead of just being place where monsters scare kids or something. Oh, I love this
now,
scene here. He just walked towards us ever so slowly and dramatically. The heroes of tomorrow. That's great, because it makes sense, because what they're doing is dangerous, they thought to be dangerous. Making them real heroes, trying to retrieve these screens, putting their lives at stake.
And that's a very important job too, because without, you know, them scaring the kids, they wouldn't have the electricity they needed.
Yeah.
I can't imagine trying to keep...
This part where they, you know, display their strength here, you know, is great. Each of their capabilities, you know, giving you that awesome feeling that these monsters are not just cartoon characters, you know, they are powerful and not to be messed with. It's quite a coincidence that he got seven fingers to count down with. really cool how they make the scoreboard look like a high scoreboard from an arcade game. Aim for the high score, boys.
Now, there's some logic that doesn't quite fit with these doors, because naturally, although a kid is not scared of the monster anymore, the kid could move eventually, and there could be a new child in that door 10, 15, 20 years from that current time. So, there is some little loophole, but you know, you don't really think about it, so it's not that bad of, big of a deal.
Yeah, but since this is kind of like a corporate industry, you know, maybe they are just shredding the door because of the practical reasons. It will take a long time for the kid to be replaced. Another family moves in, maybe after about several years.
And here it shows just how afraid the monsters are of the kids. Just kind of funny, because they're the ones trying to scare the kids, where the kids scare them as well.
Speaking of that monster who was scared of that kid just now, you know, he has some really great lines, you know, like, he was this close to him, I will get die.
Yeah.
It's a pity that these kind of quotes don't get remembered as much as the famous quote in after other live-action movies, like, I'll be back on Terminator, you know. Yeah, just a real pity. A great set out here, especially with, oh man, several canisters of screen energy pwned.
This is one of my favorite parts, when the CDA comes in and they just go way overboard.
Oh, this is great. I love the 2319.
And the best part is, it's all for Sock.
It's funny how they react like it's some kind of epidemic.
Yep. And here it's obviously just a little Sock.
Yeah. Obviously to us, it would be quite silly to worry about Sock, you know, but we know that to them it's seemingly radioactive, you know, but that's the humor right there.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't take this lightly. Look at how many people in yellow they have coming in for this one sock.
Oh man. It's amazing how fast they shave him.
I want to know what he's drinking. Ugh. Meanwhile, Roz is in the background, looking at papers.
It's a great irony contrast here. It's been used a couple of times in other monster stories where what's disgusting for us is good for monsters. Like the deodorant thing.
Yeah, did you see that? I can't believe it. They actually made it look like he sniffed his armpit, and I can't fathom how they got that figured out.
Only now do I notice how similar is Mike's eye to that eye on the M of the movie title.
So originally this scene was outside, but they didn't have the budget to create the outside environment, so they put it back inside the main floor. And it seems to work pretty well there. I'm not complaining.
I think it works well, too. I didn't know originally that it was supposed to be outside.
Yeah, Roz was going to have a hot rod.
That could have been interesting.
I mean, that would have been a little bit exaggerated. I wonder what the abuse is. Oh, that's the abuse.
When they first started coming up with the idea for Monsters, Inc., I guess Sully went through quite a few different personalities, and at one point, he was an insecure ex-scarer who wore thick glasses so he didn't have to work anymore. And it's kind of funny, he goes from that to being, you know, the top scarer. And I think, you know, it was a good decision on their part to be, or to keep him up at the top. Kind of like a celebrity almost.
Right, and the child went through the same morph. The child used to be quite old, and the further they got, the more they realized that the child needed to be younger because then he depends on Sully more. So they made her quite young in the end.
The great thing about the kids in Pixar is that they seem very real. They don't have personalities that seem forced and out of place, created only for comedy and laughs. Instead, Andy is just like any young adolescents that talk with their toys. Sid is just like the bully on the next block, and you know, John Lester didn't really hinder that by making Sid outrageously laughable. Then here, Boo, I can really feel the innocent nature from her, you know. It's like she's a real kid with all the things the kids come with. Even if she's a little bit annoying.
Yep. And that's what adds to the laughs, just because you know that's what a normal little kid would be like. And it's kind of, you know, juxtaposing it in this, like, monster world is really fun.
You could just realize how fast Boo was. Sully just fall, and yet she was able to get on his back in time, you know, before he closes the door.
Mm-hmm.
First animated toilet ever.
Even though it's a little bit disgusting. $193.
I'm sure
that's the locker number of George Sanderson. Yeah.
I'm sure the people at Pixar have a lot of pride in that.
And then with the Cyber Relief, we have the Greek pal right here. Yeah. To be honest, kids annoyed me when I was younger. I used to hate the crying of younger kids, especially babies. It's like they are purposely torturing you with their screams.
I think it's cute how she calls Sully kitty. Because he's pretty much the farthest thing from a cat. Except that he's fuzzy.
Instead, Sully has a kind of a canine kind of face, especially with his nose.
Pete Doctor did mention that there were three things that he wanted Boo to say, and it was Boo, her name, Kitty, and I think Mike Wazowski.
You know, one thing I always wonder is if there was supposed to be a box with compacted canister cans just packed together, I wonder how they were able to make those noise with the metal colliding with each other. Later on, when Randall pushes the box back in again, you can notice that there's no none of that sound again, making it kind of a goof in the movie.
Originally, Mike was going to propose to Celia in this scene, if I remember right, and that didn't happen.
It's great how they made Celia's personality a little bit on the feisty side, having this temper going on.
There's a little disturbing thing. On the platter there, there's actually an eyeball that has a skewer through it. It's quite disturbing.
Again, what's disgusting for us is fantastic for them.
I want to know what's on that menu.
Hidden Mickey coming up here. Three, two, one, and yep, he's a Mickey. Kill Scary Kid in three, yep. look at those two green. Look at those two green little monsters. They look like the eye of that lush yellow one. You know, they just live off his head like that. And then he wakes up and reveals eyes.
Amazing how quickly one little girl can clear a restaurant.
Look at that huge cup, jeez.
One thing I would like to point out is that instead of having a sort of a Japanese accent like most chefs in those sushi restaurants, you know, the octopus chef just now back in there talks like any Americans, indicating that maybe monsters here in this movie don't have any use of different accents. Nice pun there. Catastrophe. This is just a nice little reference to the classic news media in classic monster movies, where the authorities, you know, are hiding and the truth, and people are exaggerating about it.
Looks like a hot dog.
It did.
Oh dear, oh boy.
Here come the waterworks.
As I said, I hate it when kids cry.
It's not included.
This is a nice indication of the power of a kid's laughter compared to a scream.
It's also foreshadowing into how laughter can be used as an energy source.
Yeah. Nice setup there.
Definitely looks like a killing machine to me.
I love the nice little references to the escaping methods used in other classic stories.
Spoons. Oh, we could use sporks. I love how he uses Cheerios to lure her in.
Yeah. And then makes up a bed of newspaper like she's a dog or something.
Well, I guess in the monster world, that's how he sees her in some way.
That's true.
Kids are wild animals in the monster world.
He doesn't even try, he just pushes the blocks.
This is a nice little warm moment right here, especially with Solly's hand signs.
Which, by the way, had to be changed for different languages, because a lot of that is, it's derived from, you know, English. So, I know in a few different languages, like probably Japanese, they probably had to change those so they were better understood. Some pipe-o-matic up there. Pipe-o-matic was the system used to make all the pipes in the movie.
Mike has the best lines, which is just great how they balance out each character's good points, making fans liking all of them instead of favoring any specific one of them. Solly's the main star and Mikey's the sweet funny guy, while Boo, though a little annoying, is just cute. Notice how it references to the mythological monsters of real life. It's this kind of reference that increased the reality of the universe within the movie.
So just to bring up a random question, have we actually found A113 in this movie?
Another great line from Mike here. Totally fits his character, Billy Crystal, that is. If you notice the other characters he plays in other live-action movies, he almost have lines with such similar humor and the tone of sarcasm. It's just great. By the way, how could they tell that Boo's a girl? I mean, they are monsters, right? I couldn't really tell if a horse is a male or a female unless I check something. Yeah.
But we don't need to go into that.
Yeah, but it's a great little factor here because maybe they took out lessons on how to differentiate the genders, you know, so that each monster could be more specifically assigned their child by offering some of the monsters that cannot scare better, you know, girls, because they scream louder, you know, easier to scare.
As far as I understand it, the way in cartooning, you draw men and women differently, so they're easy to differentiate when they come on screen. Women are more curved and streamlined, while men are bigger and buffer.
Trying to sweet talk Roz. Doesn't seem like it's working though.
You forgot to turn in your paperwork.
He didn't, I didn't. Oh. Another great reference to an expert of real life. This time the giant from the Jack and Beanstalk fairy tale. Notice how Boo was able to find Sally even with the hood on, like she can see through the suit or something. When Fungus steps in for this scene, Randall didn't scold him for scaring him like he normally would, you know. Instead, he quickly goes to check each toilet. It's like as if he heard Mike's leg slipping into the toilet bowl, even though his ears are not visible, you know. Just goes to show how cunning and sneaky Randall's character is. great filmmaking there.
That's great that the three of them were right in their line of vision, yet they didn't see him.
By the way, this is the first time the movie informs us on the machine. It won't be mentioned again until much later in the movie.
Can you tell just how much Sully has taken to Boo? He's starting to really care for her.
This is the part where he actually names her Boo. It shows that he's starting to grow an attachment to her.
Hear the Mickey coming up. The first monster to the left with those three eyes.
Once again, she's being treated like a dog.
Yep.
Notice how similar the CDA costumes are. It's as if only a few specific species of monsters could join the CDA.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those moments where you go, no, they are so close to getting away. Never make things too easy for the characters. Great reaction here by Randall. It all feels so real, you know, like we could really tell if something's amiss about Randall's reaction without our instincts being inaccurate later on.
Looks quite painful.
these two janitors are a little bit of a stereotype, you know, like most janitors or lowly characters have to be living with their mothers or something. Well, then, you know, mentioned, my mom will kick me out.
This is a great scene right here. So I goes through so many great facial expressions.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Hidemiki. Notice how many of those three-eyed monsters with a hornet on their head there are in this movie. I laugh out loud when I first watched this. The sick thing is that I wanted to know what's next. You know, what's the next torture device?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little bit silly, you know, because no matter how innocent or naive Sally is, fainting a couple of times, then getting back up, you know, just makes a little out there, far-fetched.
Somebody mentioned that these look kind of like the cube scene in WALL-E, and I can see some resemblance, but I would figure they would at least edit them quite a bit. This scene was actually longer. Mike spent a lot of time looking for him in the original, but they cut out a lot of it because it was too bulky.
Yeah, and it would have probably been too long. It's quite long here already.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a little silly that one CDA agent would just be hiding in each toilet, you know, and then they would just all burst out.
Now Sully's acting like her mother.
How old do you think Boo is? 3, 4?
I think Pete Doctor said that she's like 2.5, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I'd guess she's somewhere between 2 and 3.
That has been so high. I always thought she was a little too short, you know, to be any older.
Now, I'm noticing here how she laughed and the lights went out, but while we were in the bathroom, she did some giggling and also some crying, and lights didn't react at all, but nobody would really notice that unless they wanted to.
Randall's hiding under the bed. Because he didn't even bother to check, you know, if it's the child or, you know, it's Mike Wazowski. So he's definitely, you know. Here he is. See when he pushes the box away, you don't hear the, you know, metal colliding sound. Nobody suspects why Randall is carrying canister cans away from the scaffold.
I think it'd be really creepy to work with Randall, because every time he blended in, you wouldn't know where he was, and he'd just pop out just like that.
Yeah, and I think that was something that was mentioned by one of the directors. How you couldn't say anything, because Randall could be anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so, you'd always be afraid.
Yeah.
And that's a good part of his character. I mean, you're setting him up to be this really kind of mysterious and really sneaky character. So I think it works well for him.
Now, originally, this secret entrance was a machine. I think it was a candy machine. And that got changed because it seemed almost too unreal. And so they removed it and just made it the secret door.
But it is a little coincidental how, you know, she just pulls her tools away and the board just opens to an opening. Especially when the tool is just placed nicely at a height so that she could reach it.
Yeah, that is kind of...
Well, that's the beauty of cartoons for you.
It doesn't have to be real, it just has to look good.
It has to be believable, too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, this scene is really great. You know, you just really have that eerie feeling going on.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like
the steamer,
like,
realize, like, it was really nice.
Yeah.
A lot more of the Pipe-O-Matic scene here.
I like how Mike corrects him on how he threatened him.
And the revelation. Randall is plotting something that doesn't have to do with the scare record. I wonder if they have a warfare in this world, this monster world. If Waternose is going to harvest children for their screams, the human will surely fight back, you know. And then we will have a great battle scene going on there between monsters and humans. I think this might have been inspiration for Monsters vs. Aliens. And that just shows how sharp Randall is. Too bad he's tricked upon too. Right in the car. Not even giving up his riches, even to the point of death.
He tries to make a deal with Fungus. Let him ride in his car.
Poor Fungus. I wonder what this machine really does to a human kid. It's never really shown.
That'd be kind of scary to see, especially considering what it did to Fungus.
A great scene come up here. Ailing Mike's nose and Water Nose knows him. No, 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 no. Great cinematography over there, yeah. It's obvious that this guy is not cut out for scaring. And here we're just about to see how scary Solly can be.
Mm-hmm. And the reaction from Boo.
Poor Boo.
They were able to Solly's make...
Go ahead.
They were able to make Solly look very lovable as a character, but then when it comes to the scaring, they make it look as horrible as possible. And it's great to see that they can do both sides.
Yeah, it's a great contrast there. I think I cried here when I first watched this. This is just great, you know. I feel even more connected to Solly when I realize how he feels when he later on says, "Do you see the way she looked at me?" You know.
And then now he's able to see what he looked like on those TV monitors.
Yeah. And the true revelation of Waternoo's true intention is revealed. For the good of the company.
And here we enter Act 3. The Himalayas!
I wonder if people could actually find that metallic door in, with the light bulb in the attic.
Kind of going back to the hair simulation we talked about earlier in the movie, Solly has over 2 million hairs on his body, so it was like a crucial thing for them to do that, and I know they were pretty proud of it, especially having the snow stick to some of the fur.
Yeah, they went back and modified the actual hair code so that it would work with the snow. They even calculated how many pieces of snow would collect in his hair depending on how long he is out there, which is quite amazing.
Yeah, shows how much attention to detail Pixar has.
As John Lasseter likes to say, they sand the underside of the drawers.
Great line here.
You'll see that he has a lingonberry jam back behind him. And originally, he was going to appear licking a knife with the jelly on it, and he was going to be like, you know, like licking off blood. And they thought it was hilarious, but it ended up not working very well. So they went to this new idea with the snow cones, and I think that worked out just as well. But there was a point where it just didn't stick because the snowballs didn't seem realistic. And at the 11th hour, they went in and changed those, made them very realistic.
John Ratzenberg, Pixar all-time guest voiceover. Great guy. I love this moment. In many animated movies, you get this kind of character conflict that really affects their relationship, but none of them feels real. In this movie, however, this scene, it just really touches you. But of course, since this is a kids movie, Pixar needs to keep the tension down by having the abominable snowman cracking a few humor here.
The differences between the two is kind of interesting. You know, Mike is still concerned about being on top. You know, he's concerned for Sully, you know, setting the record. He's concerned for himself and his relationship with Celia. And now Sully's moved on, and he realizes what is important, and to him that is Boo. And then this is where the conflict kind of arises.
Yeah, and I can see this being very hard to make, because there's a lot of emotions going on here. And they have to make them all prominent, and they have to tell the story as well as possible. And there are times where the director has said that they've gone over this scene many, many times to perfect it. And I think the final job is amazingly good. It keeps it just right.
This is really one of the significant foundation that builds the Pixar reputation. The visual element here is very good. You know, it's like the light just leaves Mike, and you know, it leaves him alone in the dark. Very good visual message.
I really like Sully's determination to get back and set things right and save Boo. I mean, he's really willing to go through a blizzard.
Literally.
Yep.
And coincidentally, the monsters are incidentally scaring the kids when Sully wants to get back, providing the gateway back to the monster world. This brings me to another question. Don't the parents ever find out about these monsters? You know, if this world is anything like ours, assuming with all the references, what's stopping the parents from checking out on their kids during their sleep so that their discovery of monsters not only occurs in the Arctic or some weird wilderness, you know, with the abominable snowman and the Bigfoots? Again, another unexplainable question. I wonder why they took so long to get Boo in their seats. It's great that they made the machine so menacingly looking, so that it would seem that any ordinary child would just scream when they see the tube approaching their mouth. So that it makes sense.
It's funny how Mike's sitting here talking while Sully's getting beat up by Randall. Randall has quite the grip.
It's interesting that those quarantined have to wear those dog collar things. What do you call those?
Clever of Celia to do that. She knew that people would swarm to him. I read somewhere that there's over 5 million different and identifiable doors in the vault here.
I wonder how the monsters build the doors in the first place. You know, if they just build one door and explore the world's closet doors or something, you know. How do they even pinpoint the locations of those doors?
This is one of my favorite climaxes because it really shows you just how big this movie is, how much they're trying to convey, and you're practically going all over the world because you have a door to every kid's room in this one vault. It's like going around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, even though there are a lot of these questions that are unanswered in Pixar movies, it shows the filmmakers of Pixar, yeah, really following in, you know, probably following in Hayao Miyazaki's footsteps. You know, that famous Japanese director, yeah. Japanese movies often have unanswered questions which don't affect the story logic one way or another. As long as these questions don't affect the logic of the story, it's perfectly okay if they are unanswered. Notice that just now in the hall with a lot of doors, this hall, millions of doors, there aren't any doors of other designs. They all look the same. Well, you know, just now the slide doors, you know, it's like a rectangular shape, but you don't see any, you know, those large rectangular doors here at all. And we are about to reach the end of the movie. Great actions sequence here. It just shows that you don't have to use explosives or robot action to create fantastic action. The thrilling thing about this kind of action scene is that you have two adversaries battling it out head to head, expressing their relationships with each other.
Looks like Transformers.
Yeah.
I love the music additions that they have here.
Yeah, it really enhances the film.
You don't want to make her angry. Mm. You wouldn't like it when she's angry.
I like how she overcomes her fears. Like, she was terrified of Randall to the point where, you know, she's, you know, huddling away as far as she can, and then she decides that, you know, Sully's important to her, so she overcomes her fears and starts bashing him.
It's great how they make Randall's colors react to his feelings like a chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
Those are actually different designs they had for Randall before the movie went into production. So.
That's cool how they incorporated that.
And here comes a scene with the trailer from A Bug's Life.
And the Pixar, or the Pizza Planet truck.
Yep.
Again, another scene that didn't make much sense, because if they punch out the light, you know, they don't have to throw the doll away. You know, Randall cannot, no matter what, he cannot come back in. Again, never make things too easy for the characters. Actually, there's an aspect here I would like to talk about for a minute or so. Just like between the Terminator and Terminator 2, I also found the structure of Monsters Incorporated and War-E to be a little bit similar. Both have the characters, or in War-E's case, character, going about his job. Both have the character's daily routine interrupted. Then slowly we discover a corrupted plan within the system. And then we have the final confrontation, which is coincidentally seen in almost all Pixar movies, even in Toy Story. The final obstacle at the end that leads to a sure happy ending. I've talked about this before in my War-E commentary with Monsters Incorporated is Randall's seeming defeat before that one last confrontation with Waternoose. With Toy Story is Woody being thrown out of the truck with and all by all the other toys in it. If Finding Nemo is Nemo seemingly dying, it's all the same pattern, you know. That's probably why in War-E, when War-E lost his memory, I knew he's gonna, you know, there's gonna be a happy ending somehow, so I didn't really feel much for it. Yeah. What's nice about this ending and what makes it different from that of War-E, possibly better even, is that this nice little upcoming, you know, there's this upcoming twist, which War-E lacks. You know, the twist don't appear until the very end, unlike War-E's twist, which appears somewhere in the middle of the movie.
You've been a bad grandpa.
I think Mike was the one who set up this plan. Sorry, given his naive nature, I don't think. Yeah. Waternoose is a very relatable villain.
He wants the power, and the only way to get it is to do what he feels is needed. That sounds like a natural villain to me.
It seems really good. It just really makes us like Ross a little bit that much.
This goodbye scene is really touching.
Go ahead, go throw up. I love the blooper of this scene.
Notice the Jesse doll on the table there?
There's also the Lutzo Jr. ball down there, and you'll see there's also Finding Nemo.
A lot of Pixar Easter eggs here.
Which, by the way, wasn't even out yet, so I think that was just a little something they snuck in there.
Plus, this starts a tradition where Pixar movies snuck in a little of that surprise of the upcoming films.
I really feel the love that Sully and Boo have. Like, almost like father-daughter.
Did anyone of you cry in this scene when you first watched it? I did. You know, it's really a touching scene here.
It is.
They even go the extra mile and add tears to his eyes.
I wonder how Mike got to collect all the pieces of the doll later on. I mean, the CDA must have discreetly disposed the pieces. Great close-up of Sully here. Yes.
It's kind of like when you buy a video game and you beat it. You're like, yes, I just beat it. Oh, but wait a minute, I already beat it. There's nothing left to do.
I think we're making children laugh. It's a bit tougher on Mikey's part and takes a bit longer than Sully's scaring the kids.
But it's 10 times more powerful, so it makes up for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. the animators did a great job in making the characters look like their voice-over self. When, you know, when Mike is gesturing the 1 second sign, you know, he just totally reminded me of the Billy Crystal. Here it comes.
Now, if only we'd be woken up in the night by a child who was laughing instead of screaming.
Yeah.
Totally changes the definition of monsters in the closet. Nice pun there. Snake charmer.
Mm-hmm.
The sign in the background that said "Think fun" or "funny" is actually a reference to Apple.
Again, Mike doesn't care if his face was blocked off or not.
As long as he's on there.
Even if the barcode is right on his eye.
The atmosphere in Monsters, Inc. now is a lot more fun and relaxed versus, you know, the more industrial and business-like nature at the beginning.
Yeah, they totally redecorate the scare floor to have all these aspects of laughter.
Lots of balloons.
I think Solly's the head of the company now. Another great scene here that makes us love Mike even more.
Mm-hmm. Shows a lot about their friendship and how much they care about each other. That Mike was willing to go through and put all those pieces back together for Sully.
Wonder how they are gonna take it from here in Monsters Incorporated 2.
We'll talk about that in just a minute. So, you know what? Why not? Let's talk about Monsters, Inc. 2.
Notice how the music, you know, just now Randy Newman's name just passed by, you know, that's why the music and scores in this movie is very similar to that of Toy Story. Let's just give our conclusive thoughts here first. What do you think of the movie?
This is one of my favorite Pixar movies. I mean, the story as a whole, from the setting of the scenes to the climax and then to the falling action resolution, like, I really like how it plays out. And the characters are great and really relatable. Like, you really can feel for them and get a good handle on what their character is like. And I think Pete Docter did a fantastic job all the way through with this. Especially being his first time directing, I say it's pretty impressive.
If you guys love Monsters, Inc., then you're going to love Up, too. That was also a great movie, and you should definitely go see it as soon as possible.
Another good Pete Doctor movie.
Because this is one of Pixar's first movies, that's why the staff team have a lot of space to be original and, you know, creative with it, instead of using the same material. Not that they do, you know, in later movies.
This was actually the first film to be made at Pixar's new location at Emeryville. So it's kind of a fun milestone film for them. I think it's amazing how many people work on a film. I mean, between the different departments.
Yeah. Amazing how many people are required to work on a film.
Yeah. And it takes like 4 or 5 years to make.
Yeah.
A lot of dedication.
It's all worth it.
So, let's talk Monsters, Inc. 2 a little bit. It was only a couple of weeks ago that, we came across an article mentioning that Pete Doctor plans on making a sequel to Monsters, Inc. after completing Up, which is obviously already done. There's not a lot of word on the plot or anything. We mostly just know the fact that he plans on doing something around a sequel.
Yeah, I still don't know how I feel about it. Like, I like Monsters, Inc. on its own. Like, I think it ended perfectly, and I really don't know where they would go with it. But I also trust Pixar because they've stated that they won't do a sequel unless they have a really good, solid story. So, I mean...
Oh, there was
You can go.
Okay. There was another member on the forums who mentioned that there is a Monsters, Inc. 2 script that exists. So I'm assuming that the story that's going to be in the sequel is going to either be it's going to be either that script or part of the script, or they have their complete own script, new. But either way, I trust Pixar, and I know that they'll give us a good movie, because they've already given us 10 good movies, and it doesn't make sense why their 11th would be worse.
Right.
Of course we have Cars, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That is a questionable one, yes, but you can't say that that was a bad movie, because it wasn't that bad. It's just it didn't hit home with some people, and it hit home with others, so it was really a mix.
That's like any movie, really. I mean, some people like them and some people don't. You'll have that anywhere.
A lot of people argue that's because it was based on the movie Doc Hollywood, but I just see it as, you know, your own personal opinion. I still like Cars. I like every Pixar movie, just in a different way, and that's kind of how the Pixar community is. We all like all the movies. It's just we like them all in a different way. And that's what makes us as fans unique. Quick, before the Luxo lab.
I had read somewhere that Pete Docter actually did the animation of the Luxo lamp for the intro and outro.
If you have that article, I'd love to read it.
I'll have to try to remember where I found it. I guess that wraps up the commentary then.
Yep.
Thanks for watching.
See you next time.